LNB's audio diary for the 27th of April. It is a Thursday and it's just about 12:30 in the afternoon. I am pulling away from Burger King right now. I picked up some fast food for food, you know, for everybody. I just got out of the dentist. Went from the dentist and down the street. I'm in Taylor right now, Taylor, Arizona. And I had a temporary crown put on a broken molar. I don't know if anyone remembers, but a few weeks back I talked about that. I believe I did anyway. Anyway, it came up. My appointment finally came and I went in there. It's a pretty involved process. I knew it would be because it's not the first crown I've had, and but it wasn't bad. It really wasn't bad, and there was a new. I think she's a dentist, but like new out of school, and she, my regular dentist who is there, Dr. Kasky is his name. He's excellent. He did a little bit, and then he had her take over and finish it off. And, she was really good, but I mean, she's like 12, but everybody is now to me, so. But she was very good. And, this is just a temp. I go back in 3 weeks for the, full crown, which they have to send off to get done. I guess that's an involved process. It's probably all computer controlled and everything else. I'd love to see how that's done. I would love to see how that's done. It went okay. It went okay. I'm still mostly numb, but yeah, it'll be all right. So let's see. Chapter 15, I believe it is, of All He Surveys, Volume 1, hit the feed. This is the audio version, hit the feed today. Really last night. And this morning Ignatz wrote me and said, yeah, you screwed it up. And I went and listened to it and I did. So I gotta fix that today. There's an option at Podbean where you can just upload a revised version of something. So I'll go that way. Oh man. Is it me? Somebody listening maybe can tell me, but I seem to remember that you used to be able to go to Podbean, the Star Drifter feed there, or this one, the audio diary feed, and you could listen right there. And I can't see an option to do that anymore. And I feel like it's a piece of functionality that got taken away. I like the fact that you could do that, and maybe I'm misremembering, but I could have sworn that was a capability. I mean, you can go to my site and listen to it. Ah, sorry. That's a piece of a molding compound. There's pieces of it in my mouth. You know, it comes breaks off. If you've had a crown before, you know what's involved. But I'll be spitting that stuff out for a while. Okay, so anyway, that's just a minor side note, but I suppose it doesn't matter because most people don't go there and listen there. Most people are listening on or through some sort of app. So I guess it doesn't really matter, but anyway. So yeah, I gotta fix that. I'll fix that later today. It won't be an easy fix on my end though. On the pod, as I say, the Podbean end, it's very simple. But on my end, I have to recreate that chapter in Ardor. Because I've already done chapter 16, which is up on Patreon right now. So, I'll have to go and just recreate it, I guess. Not too big a deal. And I know where I went wrong, because I revised. I don't know, it's hard to explain. But anyway, I know what I did wrong, I think. So, hopefully I'll be able to, you know, not repeat that mistake. Let's hope. Anyway, let's see. What else has been happening? Well, I've been volunteering at the shelter a lot. I was there, oh, I don't know, probably an average of 3.5 hours a day this week. It's basically a part-time job that I'm not getting paid for. But if I don't do it, then Mrs. Bronx has got to do it. But she's got to cram it into her day on top of everything else that she's been doing. And it just wouldn't be possible. She'd come home exhausted. And they lost somebody. Somebody got fired. This lady that wasn't really doing any work. So she got canned. So they're down a full-time employee. And there's only a couple of volunteers that work with the cats and such. So they have a fair number that come in and socialize the dogs and walk the dogs. People love doing that. You know, in nice weather anyway. And so I see them with people every day just about when I go who are dealing with dogs, but not so much on the cats and rabbits side. There is a lady that supposedly works Fridays. You know, she's a volunteer that comes in on Fridays. I haven't spoken to her in quite a while. But I think she's still coming in, so she's pretty good. She's a rabbit person, too. She actually knows about rabbits. And did I mention that one of the rabbits got adopted? I came in the early part of the week, and it was only two rabbits. And it was like, oh, what happened? And at first, nobody knew, because it happened on everybody's day off or whatever. But they looked in the computer, and sure enough, one of the rabbits got adopted. So that's why they're there, and that's good news, and that makes the rabbits even that much easier. Which is good, because there are more cats than ever. So it's been pretty involved. I don't really enjoy it. I feel a sense of ownership over the rabbits. I guess because they're always everybody's last thought, right? Because they are so, first off, they're quiet, right? They don't make any noise the way cats and dogs do. But secondly, they don't require much. So as a result, they tend to get pushed back on everybody's priority list because they're in everybody's mind, they're just so easy to take care of. Well, they are, but like a lot of small jobs, if you've got big jobs to do, you should take care of the small ones first so they're not something you still need to do after you're exhausted from the big job. So, you know, that's pretty basic productivity thinking. And as a result, they tend to be, you know, an afterthought a lot of times. And I think they deserve more than that. So I make them the first thing I do when I come in, and I take care of them, and then get on to the cats. And the cats are not, I don't find a lot of joy in that, but it needs to be done, and they need to be taken care of, and they need to be clean and healthy and, you know, at least reasonably used to human beings. If we can get them. Every now and then, they take in feral cats too, and those, I'm not going to touch a feral cat. I'll let somebody else do that. But I haven't seen one yet since I started volunteering. Though I've seen some that are pretty darn close and don't like to be handled, so. But it's not the same as a crazy animal that's tearing through the entire facility, which they have gotten in the past. Anyway. So, let's see. Quite a while ago, I mentioned that I had bought a copy of Make So Mend by Bernadette Banner. Now, Bernadette Banner is a YouTuber who does historical costuming. And I've followed her channel for many years. I've watched hours and hours and hours of her content. And I've learned a lot from a sewing standpoint, and they're entertaining and you know, instructional. They're, you know, or informational, let's put it that way. She doesn't do how-tos per se. She'll cover a topic, a general topic a lot of times, or she'll do weird you know, Victorian beauty challenges, because they, you know, back in those days, they did some really strange and sketchy stuff to themselves, you know, for the sake of beauty. So she'll do stuff like that, and it's funny. But anyway, she wrote a book, and it is a how-to book. It's a sewing book, and mostly basic stitches and basic things on how to do patches and darning and just general stuff about fitting sleeves and all this other stuff. It does not go into extreme depth, but as like your first sewing book, this would be ideal for a lot of people. And while I've read some sewing books before, I don't own one right now, and I didn't realize that until, you know, her book came out, and I thought about it, and it's like, I've borrowed books from the library and read them, but I don't own one myself to have on the bookshelf when I need to look something up. So, you know, long story short, I went and I bought the book. And I finally finished it last night, and it was very interesting. And I did see some stuff, like some interesting things on how certain types of, especially mending, and mending was kind of a quiet goal for me this year to try to up my mending game. And so far I've done exactly nothing on that front, but it's something that I want to get a little bit better at. I can sort of do, you know, like sew a hole, like if I get a hole in my pants or something like that, I can sort of do that, but it looks bad. There are better ways to do it. Darning is one of the ways, and that it's not what I always thought it was, right? Darning socks, everybody's heard of that. But if you actually look at what darning actually is, it's not just sewing up a hole. Anybody can do that. I've done that. And it tends not to look very good, and often, especially if it's something like a sock, it doesn't feel very good either. But with darning, it's more involved. But it's not necessarily complicated. You just need to understand it. And I imagine practice helps quite a bit. So anyway, the book covers stuff like that. And it's full of lots of photographs and how to, you know, close-up examples. And a few breakout sections between the chapters cover people who are in the historical costuming scene, which I'm not. I don't make historical costumes, Victorians, men's clothes, and, you know, or dresses or anything like that. But strangely, I just find it very interesting. I find it very, very interesting. So, I finished that last night, and I think I'm going to. I don't know that I'm in the middle of a book right now that I need to get back to. So I have to look around to find something to read. Not sure what that'll be. For the longest time, I was just reading and rereading All He Surveys. So, you know, because I'm going to go in and record, and I want to make sure that I'm very sure of what I'm reading. And as I'm reading, you know, to prepare myself for the recording process, I see lots of editing problems. So I fix those, and then I got to reread it again. And then, you know, it's almost like a never-ending thing, but I think it'll be fine. You know, the whole recording process is a few hiccups here and there. I was happy Ignatz reached out. I mean, presumably people on the Patreon listened to it, and nobody mentioned this to me. So, I don't know. But, yeah, I'll work on that later. Haven't been doing a whole lot more, working a little bit on the role-playing game, just a little, not major stuff. I've been working on a couple of things. One of them is I have a miss chart for ranged attacks, right? So you shoot at somebody or you throw a grenade at somebody and you miss, right? Most of the time it doesn't matter where it goes, right? But sometimes it might matter, right? If there are people around or delicate equipment or, you know, you're having an ill-advised shootout in a munitions factory, something like that. And in which case, a mischart can come in handy, right? So the first one I came up with was overly complicated, and it was a little hard to understand. Even after I made it, it worked really well when you did it right, but it was a lot of die rolls and it was complicated. So I thought, well, this could be something fun. And basically, I just had a series of concentric circles, and you imagine basically the target that you missed is standing in the center of those concentric circles. And then you roll, and the circles are cut up into pieces like a pie, and those pies are in rings, and each section has a number. You roll a die to see where your attack actually went, right? And that's good, you know, that's all well and good. That does work, but it's not all that realistic when you think about it, right? The problem is that I was using a 20-sided die. And a 20-sided die is a linear roll, right? If you roll a 20-sided die, you have the same chance of rolling a 1 as you do a 7, a 10, a 20, all of these things. It's always a 5% chance straight that you're going to get a particular number on a 20-sided die, right? The result of which is that when someone misses on that miss chart, the attack could go anywhere on that chart, right? It could end up absolutely anywhere. There's no, you know, there's no predicting it, right? Which can be amusing, but it's not realistic, right? Because when you think about it, if someone's shooting at you or throwing things at you, some attacks can sometimes end up anywhere. That could happen, right? It could absolutely happen. But most of the time, if they miss you, they will miss you not by very much. The attack will be somewhere in your general vicinity most of the time, right? And again, we're talking about an attack that does not hit you, right? You have not been struck by this thing, but it could have hit you. It was close. Most of the time, it's going to be somewhere in your vicinity, right? It will go over your shoulder. It'll go to the side. It'll go at your feet. It'll go behind you because it went between your legs or under your arm as you raised your arm, something like that. Most of the attacks will be somewhere in your vicinity, right? Not an even chance of it being anywhere in the zone. So how do you simulate that? Well, you simulate that by using a set of dice, right? Now, if you use six-sided dice, which I decided to go with 3 6-sided dice, that produces a bell curve in terms of the numbers that can be generated by it. And so how that works out is the numbers, I think it's 10 and 11, are the most common numbers that will come up when you roll 3 6-sided dice, right? Then there are other numbers that are a little less common and others that are a little less common. The least common ones are 18 or 3, because 3 to 18 are the range of numbers that you can generate. Those are the least common, and those would be the extremes, right? The ones that could end up almost anywhere. So how does this work out in practice, right? Well, I decided that probably for most attacks, using the concentric circle is a mistake, right? The series of rings that are centered around the missed target, right? Probably most of the time it's going to be more or less like a triangle or a wedge, right? Like a shotgun blast or something like that. But it's in that area because most of the time the attack is coming from a single source, right? And this is per attack, right? So it's coming from a particular place. And it's going at the target who I've decided to place in the center of this wedge, right? It's going at that target, but it doesn't hit them. So odds are it's going to be somewhere in their vicinity. And the further away you go, the greater the distance, or, you know, the angle of the hit will be greater as you move further away from the source of the attack, right? It sounds complicated, right? But in the end, it turns out that if you set that up and then cut it into pieces, you can assign numbers to those pieces, right? Choosing the most common numbers that would come up on 3d6 to be the nearest to the target. That is missed. Remember, the target is missed. It has not been hit. You only use this chart if you miss, right? So those would appear near the target. The segment where the target is standing, that doesn't get a number because that doesn't get hit. It can't get hit on this chart because you only use the chart if you miss, right? So that person is in the center, and then you have sections branching off from this person, or actually it's in the wedge, right? But the ones closest to this person are the most common numbers that would roll, that would come up on 3d6. And further off and closer into the target, those numbers are less common, right? And the least common are the ones that are, I figure, going to be right directly in front of the person who's making the attack. It is possible they could do it, right? They could shoot themselves in the foot, or shoot their partner, or, you know, make a mistake of some sort. They, you know, drop the grenade at their own feet, right? That sort of thing could happen. It's unlikely. So the number reflects that, but it is still possible. What's more likely is that whatever the attack was is going to be close, but no cigar, right? And I haven't done a lot of testing on this, which, you know, I have to do a lot more testing on this to figure it out, but, you know, make sure that it's working the way I want it to. But when you look at it, it doesn't look like it makes a whole lot of sense, right? So I would need to explain all this in description, but I'm not going to bother writing it out in a coherent fashion until I've tested it to see if it works at all, you know. It could be a real mess, right? It could be a real mess. So, I worked on that, and I worked on a rule. Now, I heard about this rule for another game. I forget the name of this game, but I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about it. And I thought it was an interesting concept to speed up combat. The concept is that if you have multiple characters targeting the same target, right? They're all aiming, trying to attack the same target, the same person, we'll say in this case, right? They're all trying to hit the same person. To speed up combat, everybody rolls, right? Everybody rolls to hit, right? If anybody hits, or the first person to hit, or in the case of Star Drifter, if there are multiple people who hit, the person who hit with the greatest margin, you go with that person, whatever weapon they have, right? They do their damage, but on top of that, you add 1d4 for every other person who is targeting, whether they hit or not, right? So basically, you only have to calculate the damage being done one time in that attack if multiple people are trying to hit, right? Now, at first it sounds like, well, that's not very fair. People aren't going to be able to do their real damage or blah, 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 blah. But the fact is, in some games, and Star Drifter is one of them, there's a lot of dice rolls, and that slows things down in the middle of combat. This is one way to speed this up, or it's one concept to speed it up. Now, I've only done 2 play tests using this method, and I got to do a whole lot more before I'd be satisfied. I have one character who's a tank, right? She's got a lot of armor, and I put her up against 3 regular characters, 2 pistols and 1 rifle, right? She got smoked, and I mean smoked. Didn't even get I think she never hit at one person, not one of the other characters that were attacking her, and they took her out terribly. You know, she got killed really, really fast. Three or four rounds and she was dead. But she rolled really bad, very badly, right? Never hit anybody. So that was, you know, that was one example, right? It's like, wow, she went down really fast and really hard. Normally, I could expect her to last for a while, right? But the dice were against her. Well, if the dice are against you, you go down no matter what, right? So I tried it again. This time she won. It wasn't a complete smoking of the bad guys, right? I have rules in place for whether the bad guys, whether their nerve breaks and they want to either give up or run away or negotiate or something like that, or cower in a corner, something, right? And so two of them got killed and one of them left, right? So that was a success, and she hardly took any damage in that one. So it really was, you know, the first one was either anomalous, or the second one was. I don't know, so I need a lot more testing on that. And I need to test that straight up and not include the miss chart, the new miss chart, because I need to understand, you know, if something is working or not. And if I have these guys attacking her and I have the miss chart up, and you, while I'm using the combined die roll rules or the combined attack rules, I might not know if, like, she misses and kills somebody by accident. I might not know if it, you know, it doesn't give me an accurate view of either system. So I have to do them straight up, you know, so it'll be a lot more of my own playtesting to figure out if that's actually going to work, if it's too much trouble, if it's not enough trouble, if it's too deadly, not deadly enough. But the idea is just to speed the combat up. And if you have a bunch of people targeting this one person, that's one way to do it. And it really does work, but you can drop a lot of damage, you know? If someone's using, say, a rifle is 2d8 + 2, right? So that's 4 to 18 points of damage possible. Then you add 1d4 for each other person who was attacking, right? It doesn't matter if they hit or miss, right? With their die rolls, because their die rolls, the only die roll that counts is the one that hits, the first one that hits, right? So you can drop a crap ton of damage at one time. But when you think about it, three people are shooting her, right? At the same time, there should be a lot of damage done, you know? So I don't know if it's worth it, if the added time and complexity is better. I think when player characters are attacking NPCs, they would like that. I'm not so sure they would love it the other way around if it goes the way the first playtest went and they just get smoked. So I don't know. It's going to take a lot more work to, you know, in playtesting to see if that stuff is really playing out the way I want it to. And if you include criticals in there, critical hits, you're dropping an appalling amount of damage, you know. Understanding that in the Star Drifter role-playing game, you don't really go up in hit points or stamina very easily. You don't get a regular die or something like that you go up. You have to essentially buy your hit points. And you have a lot of other stuff you got to buy with these character points that you get, kind of like experience. But you got, you know, you have other stuff you can spend that on. And so it's not necessarily, you're never going to be this like hit point beast like you would in some other games, because it's not made that way. And you're not supposed to do a lot of fighting in this game. And I want it to be deadly so that you don't do a lot of fighting. You look for other ways to you know, to solve your problems. But I want this system to be solid. I want it to work. So if you do have it, because there are going to be times when you fight, I want them to be memorable. I want it to work, and I want it to be fair if possible. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Minnesota. Okay. So yeah, that's. I guess I have been doing more work on the role-playing game than I really realized this past week. So yeah, I'll just have to do it. I came up with another idea too. Basically players have to announce their character's intentions at the beginning of the round, right? That prevents people from, you know, I'm going to do such and such, and because I did such and such, somebody later in the round is going to change their opinion and, you know, do something else, right? In Star Drifter, you want to be first in a round to put, you know, to do the thing you want to do before other people do their thing, and that's got to matter, right? That's got to be a thing that's important in the game mechanically, right? But in reality, most of the time, if other people are doing things first, that gives you time to change your mind or play it strategically or tactically, really, and respond to what they're doing in the round, right? In the round. And there are other games that work it that way, that, you know, going later in the round is actually better because it gives you that opportunity, and the mechanics are built around that concept. Well, with Star Drifter, I want it to be the opposite, so that, you know, if you can go sooner, you get to do what you want to do sooner, including, you know, if it's a combat round, you know, it doesn't have to be combat, but if it is, you maybe drop the bad guys before they can attack you if you went earlier in the round. So one of the ways to do that is this concept of declaring intentions. At the beginning, you say what your character is going to do, and that's what they're going to do, because a round is a subjective period of time. It isn't a set amount of time, right? It's more or less in the blink of an eye, in the heat of the moment, right? And it can be different from round to round. It doesn't really matter how much time it takes, you know? So you declare what you want to do at the beginning of the round, and that's what your character is trying to do, right? Now, if something happens that invalidates what you're doing, like, I'm going to target this guy, and another character kills that guy before you get to even attack, you can attempt to change. There, you know, you make a save, and if you make your save, you can switch targets or try something else, do something different than what you stated you were trying to do, right? That's a last minute thing. It's like, whoa, okay. And then you either shoot somebody else or you drop your weapon and continue trying to open the, you know, the door so your people can get inside and get away, right? You know, from the guards or whatever it is. So you have to make your save to do that. Otherwise, you know, he shot the guy and you shot the guy because either maybe, you know, you thought he wasn't dead, or it happened so fast you didn't actually see what happened. You know, it's like, and, you know, the first attack actually killed the guy, but it happened so quickly that you couldn't tell. You know, this is what you were, you know, I'm shooting. That's what you did, right? I think there's potential there. So, yeah, that's a rule that I have to play with as well. But if the rules are in place and they're laid out in a fashion that you do, first step you do this, second step you do this, third step you do this, and it's written out where it's easy to see, you can run through a round, I think, pretty quickly. or quicker than we're doing right now. And I think you could probably have a nice combat that seems to make sense and that everybody understands what's going on. One that can be very, very deadly, but isn't necessarily so, right? If either the dice are with you or you play smart, take cover, shoot from behind cover, etc., etc. I don't know. There's a lot of tinkering. You know, there's not a lot of playtesting. Sorry about the wind. There hasn't been a ton of playtesting. If I had a regular gaming group and it was a playtesting group, or better yet, if I had a group that was, you know, another group or a couple of groups that were taking the rules and playing with them, and then getting feedback. The way bigger games, more established games, or games that are from organizations or companies, they're able to do those things and get a great deal of feedback in a short amount of time. For me, it take, you know, I just have to take my time and go through it. But so far, I'm having a lot of fun doing it. In the end, I mean, isn't that reason enough, you know? If it never gets finished, if it's never polished enough to release to the general public, I'm actually okay with that. I would be okay with that because I had fun along the way. You know, of course I want other people to play it and enjoy it. Of course I do. But if that, for some reason, never happens, it still wasn't a waste of my time. It keeps my brain active. Keeps my finger in gaming, you know. So, yeah, I'm having fun. Anyway, I guess that's it for today because I am home.